Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on call blocking and how collection agencies are coping and trying to fight this difficult trend. Individuals are reporting calls from collection agencies as scams or robocalls and asking carriers to keep those calls from ever making it to their intended destination. In many cases, the collection agencies aren't even aware that the call or number has been blocked. Getting a number off the block list is not easy, and when it does happen, it doesn't take much for an individual to report the call and have the number blacklisted again. We're fortunate to have a panel of experts in the collections industry who are here to share their insights and strategies about how they are dealing with this new dynamic. This webinar is being generously sponsored by VOAPS. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is an information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Robert Blair is the Senior Vice President of Contact Strategy and Dialing Systems with Diversified Consultants International. He's been with DCI since 2009. As is the case with most of the management at DCI, he started as a collector and has worked his way up to the executive level. He is responsible for all of DCI's contact strategy and dialing operations to ensure DCI is efficient, profitable, and competitive on the scorecard for all of the client portfolios DCI services. Nick Jarman is the Chief Operating Officer of Credit Collection Partners and owner of Right Away Consulting and Coaching. Jarman recently served a three-year term on the board of directors for ACA International and is past president of the Missouri Collectors Association. Nick has also been recognized by ACA International with the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives. Jed Peek is responsible for the creation, implementation, and continual oversight of the enterprise-wide compliance management system at the Frost Arnett Company. In this role, he ensures that the compliance program aligns with the overall corporate strategy, business plan, and code of ethics of Frost Arnett. Judd also oversees multiple compliance, information, tracking, and monitoring systems. Prior to his role as Chief Compliance Officer, Judd spent 16 years as an attorney in private practice, specializing in employee relations issues. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. Today's webinar is an audio-only event. There is no PowerPoint component or no slides, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. Because we might be talking about some compliance and legal topics today, let me read the following disclaimer. This information is not intended to be legal advice and may not be used as legal advice. Every effort has been made to ensure this information is up to date. It is not intended to be a full and exhaustive explanation of the law in any area, nor should it be used to replace the advice of your own legal counsel. Any opinions expressed are the opinions of the speaker and not his organization. Today's event is being recorded, and a recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on recovery.net. And with that, let's launch into today's discussion. First, let's talk a little bit about what call blocking is and how it works. And Judd, maybe you can walk us through that.
Well, thanks, Mike. Pleasure to be here today, and I appreciate talking about this topic. I think it's important for a number of reasons, and I'm not sure all those reasons are readily apparent in the industry. For organizations that originate calls. Call blocking is, I consider it to be a term that encompasses a lot of different things. But essentially it boils down to technology that prevents a call from ringing on a consumer's telephone. So there are a lot of different ways that this is achieved. It could be consumer initiated. So, you know, if you have a mobile telephone, you can go into the settings, you can manually block calls from ever ringing again. And you know, that's been, ever since mobile phones have come out, that's been a capability. But in recent, really within the past year to 2 years, there have been new technologies that have ramped up the call blocking side of it. There are call blocking apps, such as Hiya, Call Protect, Privacy Star. These are some of the common ones. That a consumer can put in their telephone, and it will automatically have a database, a continuously updated database of numbers that it'll block. And that if that app is installed on the consumer's telephone, those numbers will never ring if they try to call in. The telecoms themselves have engaged and they've set up algorithms, and they will block certain numbers and entities from calling based on, it's kind of, these algorithms are secret. We don't know exactly what standards they use, but certainly volume of calls, the number of consumer complaints or consumer requests to block those calls, things of that nature, the telecoms themselves will prevent these from ever ringing on a telephone. And I think a good point to get out here at the inception of our talk today, these methods don't just, the purpose is to attack illegal robocalling, all these scams and unlawful attempts to dial over and over and over someone's telephone, but they're much broader in application. And why we're talking about it and why this is important for everyone is because many legitimate calls and legitimate businesses are getting filtered out. And that's first of all, that's too broad an application. And secondly, it's really unfair to all parties, consumers included, because once this technology has been instituted, they've lost control over knowing exactly which calls they don't receive anymore. If it doesn't dial or if it doesn't ring on their phone, they don't know that they've missed a call. And on the call originator side, we don't know that our calls are being blocked. So it's important to really get together and figure out a solution to this.
Excellent. Thank you. So let me follow up with this for you, Judd. If you don't really know you're having a problem, I guess, how do you know you're having a problem? How can a company tell if are they just looking at rates? Is that the only way to really sort of figure out if they're having a problem with their calls not getting through?
Well, certainly that's the most important problem that we've seen. So RPCs, right party contact rates, have dropped over time with us, and I think across the industry as well. That's the ultimate I guess true test to know that we're having a negative, this is having a negative effect. I think it's difficult to know or decipher how much of the decline in RPCs is related to call blocking technology specifically. I'm not aware of a way to parse that out. I have seen some estimates by PACE, the Professional Association for Customer Engagement. They've estimated call blocking has resulted in a 20 to 30% reduction in call completion rates. And that's broader than just the debt collection industry. But if that's a statistic that is fairly reliable, then I think it's probably something that meshes well or matches with our experiences as well. Specifically for us, trying to think on that topic just for one more point. Specifically for us, to know that call blocking has had an effect, we've had to create a testing environment ourselves. And that's, we can talk about that in a little bit, but one of the things I recommend to people on this call is create a way to test and see how it is affecting your outbound dialing initiatives to see, has it been hitting your RPC rate, your contact rate, where it's affected, if it's in certain numbers or geographies or anything like that. We need to create that intelligence.
I will definitely follow up with you on that. That's a really good idea that you floated out, and I'd love to hear more about it. Nick, let me come to you now. So we've talked a little bit about what the problem is. There is, most of the carriers do have a process for collection agencies to try, or any company, to try and get themselves off this blocked list. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how that works.
Well, I don't think that I can speak with any confidence of how you can get yourself off of the list. The same company that's blocking the majority of the phone numbers, First Orion, has a website called calltransparency.com, and they are claiming that if you want to whitelist your number, that you can contact them. Now, again, it's kind of a touchy situation when you've got one company that's looking to block numbers and wanting to block almost everything that's not 100% sure of, that they're 100% sure of, wanting to get all of your numbers so that they can, quote unquote, safely allow you to dial those. So that's the only one solution that I've heard. Personally, I would not turn my phone numbers over to them, especially with some of the past that they've been known for. But I think it puts us in a pretty good conundrum.
Can collection agencies... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to ask, this is Judd, I wanted to, Nick, ask you a question. Have you used the Call Transparency website to try to engage in that? And we've tried, and going through the process is rigorous, to say the least, and I haven't been able to get much confirmation that it's effective either. I'm just curious if anybody else has an experience with that.
No, I simply just don't trust them from what I know about them. As far as, it's really, it's just blind faith on, you know, giving them your numbers and hoping that, one, that they'll legitimately allow the calls to go through, but you have to also take into consideration, they now have all of your phone numbers and they know you're a collection agency, and their CEO went off in 2011, an AOL article, talking about how bad bill collectors are and stuff like that. The other thing you have to consider is, I think it was back in 2015, First Orion Privacy Star was caught selling all of the law. So
there we go.
Sorry about that. But they also got caught sending the information into one of the largest plaintiff attorney's offices in the country.
So you're saying maybe they're not trustworthy?
I don't trust them. I don't have enough of that blind faith with what I know about the company. I can't be sure of that now. That's my personal opinion. I would not provide them with my phone numbers.
Robert, have you tried it at all? Have any experience with trying this website?
So Mike, so thanks for having me. From what we understand, the getting through to those carriers and the companies that handle the caller ID information and the call blocking and the wireless providers, I mean, it's pretty rigorous. Understanding the revenue stream for them, there's no money in it for them, and really, I mean, their consumers, the people that are paying for their products are saying, hey, this is spam. Hey, this is, scam likely, whatever the case may be. So I just don't think that they're like gung-ho about really making sure that information is kept to where, the actual spam, the guy's calling you about the IRS scam and stuff like that. We want blocked, all of us do, but the legitimate calls, I just don't think there's no money in it for them to really make sure that this is being done. So I just don't think there's a lot of resources there. And I wasn't familiar with, kind of all that, what Nick was talking about, but, it makes sense, right? I mean, any information that you have that you give to someone, that you pose a risk of that getting out. And ultimately, if all of your phone numbers that you use get out to a, major plaintiff attorney, I mean, that's just disastrous, or it could be. So, from our standpoint, our strategy there is really just try to change up our numbers as often as we can and, combat it that way. It's somewhat unfortunate that, we have to do that, but, there's vendors out there and there's products out there, that we can talk about in a little bit that can kind of help, and, they have some solutions, but, for the most part, I think that the best thing to do for an agency or a call center to prevent call blocking is try to use, a different number set and swap them out as much as possible. I'm not sure what the algorithms are for the call blockers, or, if somebody says, hey, that's spam, is it going to get blocked indefinitely? But we try to rotate our numbers in such a way that we're not using that number for very long, specifically, like local caller ID numbers. And then we kind of swap them out, and then we might put them on the back burner and use them again in 6 months, 12 months. But just keep a real close eye on your RPC rates when you do that, and your connection rates, to make sure that typically what you see is whenever you swap out a number package, your RPC rates skyrocket. Then they usually go down and kind of level out, and that's when it's time to change it up again.
Hey, Robert, this is Judd. I, on that point where you talk about I guess, cycling through a book of caller ID numbers or local caller IDs. So we tried that as well, and our experience was the algorithms that the telecoms use to block, that's one of the factors that they pull in. So if an entity is cycling through a lot of numbers and it looks like they're cycling through, then that flags the entity, the call originator, and that actually increases the likelihood that the calls will be blocked.
Yeah, I mean you're probably right on that, but I mean ultimately at the end of the day, you know, when you're pumping out a bunch of calls every single day, I really think that you're just trying to, you know, do what you can, you know, control what you can, what you can't. You just have to kind of take it as that's just the way the business is. So, you know, we rotate our numbers out every 3 to 6 months or so. And then, you know, depending on the client or the need, or, you know, if we're seeing a drop sooner or later, you know, we've also experimented with, hey, does the LCID number work better compared to the toll-free number? You know, kind of the problem with the toll-free number is that, you know, that's the number, you know, that's the number the clients have. That's the number that, you know, everyone kind of recognizes to chat out as a upper, you know, because we typically will have this kind of the same 1-800 number. But, you know, when it comes to LCID numbers, we try to swap them out, you know, as often as we can when we start seeing, you know, diminishing returns.
Very cool. At this point, I want to pause the discussion, and I'd like to invite Todd Santa Maria from VoApps to say a few words. Todd?
Thanks, Mike, and thanks to the panelists. This is an interesting discussion and one that VoApps Direct Drop Voicemail obviously has an interest in, all things mobile contact strategy. We've been a trusted partner of the ARM industry for a long time. We have hundreds of clients, agencies around the country that have trusted us for a long time to deliver voicemails to mobile phones because we do so without calling the mobile phone. As most call blocking applications these days push calls that you make to them to voicemail, we think we really have a good method for getting messages to consumers at scale and letting them know about their financial obligations so that the ball is in their court as to when they call into the call center and make a payment arrangement. Most of our clients find that when the consumers elect to call, they know who they're calling, they know why they're calling, and they have that resolution on their mind. The interactions just end up better and result in more dollars collected and typically better morale in the call center. So thanks again, Mike. We're excited to be here and help out with this, and excited to hear more about what they've got to say.
Awesome. Thanks, Todd. I appreciate VoApp's support in sponsoring this webinar. So now let's pick up our discussion. Robert, I wanted to circle back to something you were just talking about in terms of swapping numbers. Isn't that also a sign that, you know, maybe a company's up to something if they keep swapping the numbers out that they're calling somebody? Are you potentially creating a different problem by having to do that?
Well, I mean, I don't really think so. I mean, with the dialing platform that we use, we have, you know, each region, you know, we're in Jacksonville, Florida, so the area is 904. So there's, you know, two or three numbers for each service. And, you know, one thing to keep in mind, I don't know if I was clear earlier, is when I say swap out, you know, sometimes we'll get brand new packages, fresh packages, but sometimes we'll swap them out, you know, between projects. And we do actually see a lift from that. You know, sometimes what you find is, you know, if you're calling consumers in a specific region, maybe the cellular provider or the true caller type app, you know, that blocks these calls in that particular region. You know, maybe it's not the exact same, you know, wireless provider or the true caller type blocking app that, you know, they may have in a different region. So we actually have seen success with, you know, using the same numbers, but kind of using them in a different area, different location, different consumer base. And we do see some lift from that. But I mean, ultimately, when you're dialing, you know, a bunch of numbers and you're dialing a bunch of consumers, there's an inherited risk no matter what. I mean, ultimately, especially kind of in the business that the telecom, you know, it's a high volume type of business. So we're pumping out a bunch of calls. You know, so there's always an inherent risk with that. But, you know, what we try to do is mitigate it, obviously. And, we try to do everything we can to, you know, we're not swapping numbers out every day. You know, we're swapping numbers out every few months. And like I said, sometimes we're just swapping them, you know, intra-project. But, you know, we see a lift with that. And, you know, I don't see, you know, anything wrong with, you know, changing them, especially when you're considering that, you know, your placement period might be for 3 months or for 6 months. So, you know, you're getting kind of a different consumer base. It's not as if you're calling the same consumer for 2 years straight. Obviously, that does happen in some, you know, tiers or some clients or some branches. But for the most part, you're calling, you know, that number for 6 months and you're weaning your calls as you go. Obviously, you're hitting the newer stuff, you know, a little bit harder, and then you're kind of weaning your way as it ages. So I don't see a problem with swapping every 3 to 6 months. I definitely could see a problem if you're swapping every week. That's a bunch of numbers and the cost of doing that. But, you know, every 3 to 6 months has kind of been what kind of works for us.
Okay, thanks. So clearly we've identified there's a problem, and we've also sort of identified that there's really no honest, you know, straightforward, easy way to fix it. So Nick, you know, other than just sort of throwing up your hands and saying, what can you do? What can collection agencies do to adapt their communication strategy to manage their RPC rates as a result of this issue?
Well, I think the first thing to do is to work with the dialer vendor of the agency and see what they can see behind the scenes as it goes about connecting a call through. So I'm not nearly as technical as, you know, some on the call, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to determine whether or not the call connected and then went out or didn't. And so if there was a way for our dialer vendor partners to tell us, hey, here are all the calls that got blocked, or you sent out 50,000 phone calls and 10,000 were blocked, we'd have to talk to them to see if they have that in place. But that would be the first thing to do, is to get an understanding of how broad this is to your organization, because it's just going to continue to manifest and get bigger as more companies keep jumping on board, and as the regulators and lawmakers really like the topic. They think that it's a great thing to block these calls. But the problem is that it seems like they're taking and making an expansion of the do not call list into the do not want a call list. And there's a big, broad difference there that we have to work through.
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree with Nick on that. You know, the dialer vendors, you know, we use LiveVox. They're great. I see Ray's on the call. Hey, Ray. You know, and they were actually able to help us, you know, identify some trends and identify some things that, you know, were kind of below the norm, kind of below, you know, what you would typically see. And, you know, working with the dialer vendor to identify, hey, your connect rates are low, or what do they see on the carrier side that can identify, hey, you know, here's a group, you know, they actually did that with us recently, I think back in February or March, you know, hey, here's a list of, you know, LCID packages that, you know, are kind of below the mark as far as connectivity. And, you know, we think that these might be ones that are, you know, being blocked or listed as spam. And there's parts to this. I mean, the call blocking is one thing, but then, you know, you also have the, you know, flagging as spam. You know, maybe the call comes through, but it says scam likely. Obviously, you know, folks might not answer that call. And even if they do, you know, then you have another problem. Their guard's up, right? Then you have to break that down. And, you know, time is money. So an agent's on the call, they think it's a scam. You got 3 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes before you even are able to bring their guard down, if you even are. And, you know, we all know sometimes you only get one call. So, you know, blocking the call is one thing, and then the scam likely. And then, you know, even if they answer that, you know, then you have that kind of issue. But, you know, LiveVox was great, you know, working with us and try to identify, like, hey, you know, what's being, you know, what do we think is being blocked? What do we think, you know, these number packages probably want to swap out, you know, and that was great for us. We saw a lift almost immediately. We swapped out a bunch of packages, and, you know, we just really just need to keep an eye on it. The biggest thing is working with your dialing vendor and other vendors. One I'll mention is Neustar. We're in the talks with Neustar and trying to, they came and showed us a couple of products, but, you know, they were able to show us, you know, what our numbers are being listed as, you know, from different wireless carriers. Basically, I got a, you know, a spreadsheet that says, hey, this is, your top five, top 25 number of volume in the month of June, for example. And, you know, this number is showing up as potential spam for this wireless provider and suspected spam for this one. And for this one, it shows up as account services. You know, this one shows up as spam number, nuisance likely, telemarketer. Believe it or not, we actually had one that shows up as extortion. So, you know, I don't know how these labels get there. We haven't really gotten that far, but, you know, I'm really looking forward to, you know, I kind of wish this call would have been a month or two later. I could have said like, wow, they're really doing great things for us. We just started talking to them, but, you know, they seem like they have a great product. I can't really say, you know, yeah, you should use them because I haven't actually used them and I don't want to do that. But, you know, it seems like they have a pretty good product with their caller name optimization. And I think that they're kind of working with the carriers to say, hey, you know, these guys aren't spam. These guys aren't, scam likely telemarketers. It's a legitimate business reason. Our biggest question with that is, okay, so if we say it's not, how long before it is back to being flagged? You know, from what I understand is it only takes a couple of people flagging the spam for it to be spam and then potentially blocked. So I would definitely agree with working with vendors, your dialer vendor and maybe some outside vendors to, you know, really pinpoint which numbers are being blocked, how they're being labeled, and really making sure that your name is how you want it to be shown. You know, that's kind of a big thing people don't really, you know, think about is what does it display to the caller when I call? You know, you want it to be either your name or you want it to be city and state, or you certainly don't want it to be potential spam, you know, for sure.
Of course, unless that's the name of your collection agency.
Well, I think your liquidation rates would be very low if that were the case.
Probably. It's probably you've got a whole set of other issues if that's the name of your collection agency.
Totally.
That was really comprehensive. Thanks, Robert. I'm curious, Judd, I'll start with you with this question. What are your thoughts on industry outreach, either to the carriers, to these software providers? Is that something you think that might have some benefit? I know, you know, Nick and some of you know, have expressed some apprehension about sort of sharing a lot of information with these software providers, but maybe I'm just trying to start a discussion about how the industry might be able to address this and actually try and find some kind of resolution.
Yeah, definitely. First, before I get into that, I do want to piggyback on what Robert said on the issue with the improper labeling. I think it's definitely one that can't really be divorced from the call blocking side. I mean, all those different besides being potentially slanderous, I mean, how'd you like it if your outbound calls show up as debt collector? I mean, there are third party disclosure issues potential there. As far as like the outreach side, I definitely think that there is a role for that. And it's going to be necessary. You know, nobody wants to on behalf of the team, on behalf of the RM industry necessarily, and subjugate your own business effectiveness. But there are organizations I think, you know, I've been engaged with as well that have really started, if nothing else, at least the dialogue to try to find out where that solution is going to be. PACE has been on the forefront of it. The Consumer Relations Consortium, this has been one of their Ballywick agenda items for the past year, and both organizations have met repeatedly with the FCC and with the BCFP, as well as representatives from the various telecoms, to try to find out middle as far as getting some changes in place. The problem with a lot of these app providers is, like Nick mentioned earlier, don't trust them. Secondly, there are so many, it's hard to get any sort of effectiveness if you're dealing, you know, trying to pick off one at a time. I think for our industry, the best use of burning calories is to look at trying to get some guidance and, if not, rulemaking from the FCC. So, you know, looking at, I know the FCC earlier this year, they issued their further notice of proposed rulemaking on calling obligations. I think that I'm hopeful that there will be some room for protections for legitimate businesses that come out of that, but you know, I'm afraid that a lot of the efforts of the FCC in this issue will be to broaden that net that pulls in legitimate businesses. The second, outreach side of it would be to work with the telecoms directly. So the telecoms, differentiating them from these call blocking app providers, you know, there are only, the vast majority of the industry is in three different telecoms. So it's a lot easier to try to run your due diligence with them and get whitelisted in that way. And also try to lobby them for changes that would be beneficial to call originators as a whole. The problem is you have to deal with them individually. There's no consortium that you can really talk to on this issue that I'm aware of. And it takes a long time without getting particularly certain incomes. If I looked at my own WIP items with them, I'd love to see basically an industry accepted whitelist of legitimate businesses that's shared by all the major telecoms. That doesn't exist, and I don't think that will be created voluntarily by the telecoms. That would have to be something I think that the FCC is going to strongly suggest, if not mandate.
It's one of those common sense solutions that never gets anywhere. It sounds like. I know that the FCC, the commissioners, were before a Senate committee today testifying, and we did get a question wondering about whether or not anything was related to robocalls. And having listened to most of the hearing today, I can say that it really wasn't. There really wasn't much conversation in the way of robocalls or call blocking or anything sort of related to the TCPA or a rule coming, that would sort of help clarify things. So all of that still remained kind of as cloudy as it was before the hearing started a few hours ago. Moving on, we talked a little bit about labeling, and I know sort of Robert, you mentioned using a service provider. Are there other ways that collection agencies can make sure their phone numbers are being labeled properly when making outgoing calls?
Well, I'm not sure exactly about guaranteed results that it's going to show up the way that you want it. But I know someone mentioned I think it was Judd, the testing, how to test. And we've done that for years. We'll put our telephone numbers, the operators, cell phone numbers on test accounts, and just throw them in onto the dialing platform. And obviously you can see how your agents are handling your calls, which is great, but then also kind of what shows up on the caller ID. Is it a local number? Does it show our company name? Does it just show city and state? And obviously you do that enough times and do that consistently, you can get an idea of if any of your efforts are working to get your numbers whitelisted or to be listed correctly. I'm not really sure if anyone really has an answer as to how the numbers show up consistently every time. I did mention Neustar, and they were able to provide us some data that, for each of our numbers, how it's listing, what is it showing up as, and they were actually able to, provide screenshots. And I'm assuming that they probably did the same thing that we did and just kind of extrapolated it. And I think it's obviously, everyone knows that it's just a time-consuming and resource-inducing process. And I think that that's kind of the biggest key is having someone that is on top of it and consistently, trying to get those numbers whitelisted. I myself reached out to a couple of the app providers and said, hey, we're a legitimate business. You're showing up as, suspected spam. Just wanted to reach out, and I got a response that said they don't change them. So it's one of those things that, especially when you're dealing with the third party apps, it's, they have their own policies and procedures, and at the end of the day, they just don't, there's no mad. I mean, the more numbers they mark as spam, the more numbers they mark as fraud, the consumers are like, hey, this is working. And it probably is working for the IRS scammers, overseas and blocking those numbers, flagging them. But, it's also flagging legitimate businesses. And, I could definitely see it, especially in our industry, somebody has great credit, always pays their bills for whatever reason. They don't even realize an account goes into collections. we're calling them, and you know, they just never get the call, or they think that we're a scam or spam. And next thing you know, they find out, you know, how come no one ever called me? I mean, we get that all the time. I'm sure everyone else does too. We tried, you know, and it's one of those things that I don't know if anyone has a good answer, but I think that some of the panelists, you know, what we said earlier is really, you know, getting in front of your representatives and getting in front of the people that can make these decisions with the FCC. And I think that we're starting to see, you know, some good litigation. I know there was a TCPA ruling a month or so back that was good for our industry. So, you know, more victories like that, and, you know, more, you know, staying in front of our representatives and staying in front of, you know, the people that make the decisions, and, you know, really just try to change the image of the collections industry so that, you know, we won't be listed as suspected spam, because it's a legitimate call. And that's just kind of the toughest thing.
You know, Robert, I'm going to ditto a lot of what you said. I think that's point on, that I'm not aware of any way where you could just flip a switch and get guaranteed results on the call labeling or the whitelist or anything like that. It's a difficult process. That's one of the reasons we've kind of assigned an internal team that to tackle this issue on a lot of different fronts. But I'm going with the assumption, and I think our experience has merited this, you're not going to get a lot of movement from the app providers or the telecoms. They're just not incentivized to do what you want or to be quick about whitelisting your numbers or anything like that. So, you know, go ahead and do that if you want, but assume that you will have to take other methods of remediation to try to fix this whole call blocking issue. You know, trying to fix their RPC rates. You know, we're gathering the information and we're working with telecoms, but beyond that, we're looking at other solutions as well. You know, we're looking at I think Robert, you mentioned Neustar a couple of times. They're getting into this consulting space to try to assist companies in getting those calls to go through. Another one, I'm not recommending anyone because I haven't used them, but I know Numerical was one of the first ones to really get in this field and start providing that service as well. But we're also looking at alternatives to just outbound dialing, like the direct message drop technology, emailing consumers, SMS messaging. You know, if you have a multi-channel communication strategy, this is, you know, this is almost going to be necessary in the future to try to maintain contact rates, given this reality of call blocking.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. You know, the separate channels to reach folks is definitely, you know, the way that we're all, you know, leaning towards. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, when you start sending emails and texts, you know, you're obviously, your compliance guys are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And, you know, it's in writing, you know, no. But, you know, there's been a little bit of traction and, you know, doing that. And really just if you're going to, you know, SMS and emailing, just making sure that you're capturing consent and storing that somewhere. And, you know, if you do it right, you can absolutely, you know, reach consumers you wouldn't otherwise reach. But, you know, specifically, you know, us, you know, although we do have some other outreach methods, you know, outbound dialing is still, you know, the king for now. But, you know, I could definitely see the way the, you know, landscape is looking that, you know, might not always be the case in the near future.
Well, as you were talking, Robert and Judd, I had this vision in my head, and, you know, a letter that goes out saying, we're trying to call you, or a text message that goes out saying, we've been calling and you're not answering. Is it that you don't want to, you know, you don't want to talk to us, or you're not getting through? And I'm wondering if that might be, you know, like, you know, Judd, to your point about sort of this multi-channel, you know, sort of trying to, having this sort of, you know, go beyond a letter or a phone call, just because they're not opening the mail and you don't even know if the phone call is getting through. So, I mean, how do you kind of sort of, I guess, offset or compensate for that? And that's something that I think a lot of collection agencies are going to have to be dealing with sort of moving forward, which brings me to my next question for you, Nick. We're talking about, you know, sort of, you know, adding more channels of technology, which means cost, but we're already talking about decreased revenue in terms of lower rate party contact rates, which probably means lower collection rates, which means lower revenue and increased costs and having to sort of deal with all of this. is there a way, or can you, you know, sort of try and put a price tag on what call blocking is costing a collection industry?
Well, that's a loaded question. I can't put a number on it. I can't put a number on it, but I can put some numbers together. I was actually on the phone with John Bedard a little while ago, and we were talking about that Mind Commerce survey that came out. And if you just look at that regarding, they were looking for the problematic numbers, so it's determined inaccuracy. And Verizon had a 7% inaccurate reading, T-Mobile 10%, and AT&T 14%. So if we're seeing hundreds of billions of, or billions of calls going out in the course of a year, that's a lot of calls. We're now into the hundreds of millions, if not billions, of calls that are not getting through because they don't have good accuracy. So if you had a way to back that into how many agencies are out there, how many calls are being made, but what you could do is say, for instance, AT&T had a 14% inaccuracy rate. You can look at your dialing and your contact strategy and how many calls you're putting out and apply that number to say, okay, well, you know, we're putting out 1,000 phone calls and 14% are not going through. So we know that 140 of those didn't go through for whatever reason. So that would be one way you could put a number on it. And then you could back into the math on right party contact rates, payments, average size payments, and things like that.
So we'll just say a lot, right?
A lot. That's worth it.
There we go. Jed, I want to circle back to what you talked about it that, during one of your first comments about the testing environment. Maybe, I know you said a couple of details in some of the other things you said, but maybe you can talk a little bit more about how that's set up and how it works and what you're looking to accomplish with it.
Sure. So, yeah, I guess what we did when we tried to get our hands around this issue, we created internally a kind of a project action team to address these situations and figure out what our strategy is going to be to overcome them. So we have, you know, not full-time dedicated personnel, but we have roles that have taken on this responsibility, and they will test our own numbers. So we have several employees that have cell phones and have test accounts within our system, and we just, you know, there's a QA component to this, but there's also just trying to gather the intelligence side of it as well. We'll call them and see what happens. So I think as Robert mentioned, I want to see how the caller ID shows on these phones. Look at, make sure that we cover various providers. So we'll have phones with AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile. And a lot of them will have different, some of the larger call blocking apps installed on them. So Hiya, Call Protect, Privacy Star, these, and see how those are affecting our calls, if they're ringing or not, how they're labeling them, et cetera. And really trying to get that intelligence to investigate and find out what's happening to our calls. Now, I don't think you can create a proper strategy without having that information beforehand. So, you know, we're trying to do some analytics on that and figure out, are these, the problem areas, are they isolated to a particular carrier? Are they, you know, is it a certain number that we have? You know, we've got our bank of different outbound caller ID numbers or local caller IDs. Are there some that are being flagged and others not being flagged? And from that, I think you can divine various ways to try to attack the problem. I like Robert's, even though I didn't mean to look down on Robert's idea of cycling through telephone numbers, after he mentioned that they do that on, you know, a 3 to 6 month basis, that is broader than what we were trying to do. And I think that might be an effective solution instead of doing them weekly or biweekly or anything like that. But, you know, our internal testing team gathers that data, and then they've had experiences with call transparency and contacting the telecoms directly to try to resolve any issues or mediate them and get us in the best situation possible. And that has had varying degrees of success. I wouldn't call it totally successful, but that's the attempts we're trying to make.
Very cool. Thank you. Nick, we talked a little bit about multi-channel previously, but let me ask you, do you foresee this call blocking as sort of accelerating you know, collection agencies looking at, you know, email more, or looking at SMS more than maybe they have in the past, or looking at direct drop more than they have in the past as a means of trying to maintain or boost right party contact rates?
Well, yeah, and I think what Robert said was on point. I mean, you have to look at different channels on how you're going to communicate, but now we run back into the other stumbling block, which is the FDCPA and the interpretation of it, and waiting year upon year upon year with the CFPB to make their rule. So there's a big liability out there if you start text messaging people, you start emailing people without the proper consent, without the proper authorization from the regulators or the lawmakers. So yeah, I would absolutely encourage people to look into alternative methods of communication, all the omni-channels that are available. But you just have to do that and be careful. And it's a risk versus reward proposition because it's still a little bit of an unknown out there as far as what's been challenged in the courts. Of course, nothing's really been addressed by the regulators. So it's just something to keep an eye on.
More things to keep collection agency executives awake at night.
Amen.
and they're a tired bunch as it is. Judd, Robert, just curious, have you sort of expanded, you know, using other methods of communication as a result of this, or is that something you're looking at?
Here at DCI, we've, you know, expanded a couple of different options, a couple of different vendors, you know, to try to reach out to consumers. I think that we're right on, you know, the kind of the first step, if you will. I don't know if there's other, I don't know if Judd's team has been doing it for a while or Nick's team, but I mean, we're kind of just starting to venture out into that kind of territory. I think it's one of those things that kind of everybody was like, all right, you know, the pool's ready, but you jump in first. You know, nobody wants to be the first one kind of in the pool. But, you know, ultimately, it's one of those things that, you know, we know about the compliance risk, and that, you know, if you do it safely and, you know, you do it, you know, you make sure you execute the strategy that you put forth. I think that we're fine. I mean, I'm an optimist. You know, obviously you have the pessimists out there that you know, want to, you know, do things the old way. But I think that slowly but surely we're chipping away at, you know, some of the folks here to kind of branch out and kind of do things. And, you know, I'm hoping that in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, that'll kind of be the norm. You know, hopefully the lawmakers will kind of come to their senses and say, like, hey, you know, these guys serve a purpose. They're doing a legitimate, you know, service. And, you know, a lot of the times, you know, especially in the collection industry, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, third-party disclosure is a great one, you know. You know, you can, on the voicemail, do you leave it, you know, the mini Miranda, do you not? I mean, so there's so many things in our business and others too, where it's, you know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. So I think that really just being cautious and doing it the right way and taking, you know, webinars like this and seeking advice from colleagues and friends and other people that have done it, I think is probably the best advice that I can give.
Yeah, for us, 2018 is the year of instituting text messaging and email capabilities. And, you know, part of that is just because that we need it. But, you know, like most changes with our company, they're client-driven. And we have had clients start demanding these capabilities. So that's making the decision a lot easier for us. Myself, you know, the compliance concerns, that's paramount to me, and I want to make sure we do it right. But I don't think the industry is going in a direction where it can be avoided for much longer.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well.
All right, we've only got a few minutes left. There are some questions in the queue, but if you have a question, now's the time to open up the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel and type it in. Let's see if we can't knock some of these out. Here's a question. Does anybody know, have there been any lawsuits filed against First Horizon or any of the other, I guess, software providers for tortious interference with a business relationship? Is that something that should be considered?
Well, I'm certainly not aware of any such lawsuit. The good and bad side of business torts is almost anything you can craft an argument for it, such as a tortious interference claim. it's a novel claim. I doubt it would be successful, and I would caution against trying to run with something like that. One, I don't think it'd ultimately be successful. I don't know that this would rise to the level of unlawful activity, but at the same time, you know, who do you want to make enemies with? And if it's going to be the telecom providers, that's a pretty big enemy to make, and just not something I think you should do light-footed.
Got it. Here's a question. The calls that are not necessarily blocked but are labeled incorrectly, like scam likely or nuisance, do you handle those any differently than a call that is blocked?
So, this is Robert. I don't think that you really can. I mean, obviously, at least with the scam likely and the nuisance calls, you at least have a shot. You know, you have a shot for that person to actually answer the phone. Although, you know, I spoke about them having their guard up and thinking that you're trying to scam them. I mean, good luck when it says scam likely, they answer, and the first thing you want to know is what's left for your social. You know, of course, the media doesn't help with that. Like, you know, people are calling you asking for your social. Don't give them anything. Don't even give them the street you live on. You know, so obviously, you know, you have a little bit of it there at least. You know, and obviously you get the feedback from the person, you know, that answers the phone. Hey, you came up a scam. You know, so of course your agents, you know, bring that up the ladder, you know, hey, you know, a lot of people are saying we're getting scam likely or whatever the case may be. So, really just kind of staying on top of it the best you can is really the only thing you can do, but I don't think you really can handle them any differently.
Got it. Thanks. I know we heard from Judd in terms of what his wish list would be from a regulatory standpoint, in terms of what he'd like to see, which is a white list for all legitimate businesses. Nick, I'm curious if you had anything, you know, with Congress and the FTC sort of moving forward, maybe slowly, towards some kind of rule or resolution, what would you like to see as part of that regulation? You know, what needs to be included from the ARM perspective?
Well, I would prefer that they just stop doing everything because it's not working. But, you know, I think that ultimately they just have to understand and the big picture. And I think right now they're just getting hit by so many consumers and consumer groups that are just bombarding them with all of these complaints. And we can go on and delegitimize those. We can talk about what's available, what's not available. But as a wish list, if they're not, you know, going to just drop it, because I don't think they are, but it would definitely be to understand what the big picture is and just how impactful their opinions and their rules can be to many, many legitimate businesses, not just including the ARM industry, but anybody that is using technology to make phone calls. Because right now, I haven't seen one surefire, foolproof way to say that we have confidence that we are only going to block the numbers of the scam artists. And I don't see that down the pipeline 10 years from now, that the technology would be so fail-safe that legitimate businesses would be able to live confidently that their calls are getting through.
So you say that, you know, just that, you know, there shouldn't be any sort of call blocking technology whatsoever, because it's just, it's inherently flawed.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately I'm not, I understand we're going to get it, and there's going to be, I mean, it's going to happen, but you know, the wish would be that it didn't, just because you're going to impact so many businesses. And, you know, maybe once they implement them and a lot of businesses go out of business, they can, you know, start to look at what the cause of that is and rethink what they're doing. But I think right now it's just a matter of getting them to understand the big picture and how doing this is going to not just impact businesses, but impact consumers as well. Because if you're not able to reach them, then you're not able to help them.
Makes sense. Well, I think we've got through most of the questions. What I'd like to do before we wrap up is maybe give each of the panelists a chance to sort of summarize, maybe what they've said, or provide any sort of parting words of wisdom or anything for people to sort of be looking at in terms of their own operations, but just to give a last word per se, I guess, from each of them. And Judd, we'll start with you.
I think the most important takeaway for people on the call is it's imperative to get out in front of this now. I mean, the longer you go with either ignoring or not understanding the issue, the more likely your telephone numbers are going to be blocked. This is built in large part on consumers pressing the button. This is a scam. This is a debt collector, what have you. And as those complaints and reports back to the app providers, the telecoms get in, there's more and more likely a chance that your calls are going to get blocked. So get that intelligence now, decide what your strategy is going to do and start implementing it, because it's a lengthy process with mixed results. So you really got to start burning the calories on this end now. The other thing I think is important to keep aware of, there are representatives of the industry engaged in trying to find solutions, checking off some items from our wish lists, our respective wish lists, and figuring out what we can do to kind of rein in this overbroad problem going forward. The Consumer Relations Consortium has had many, many meetings and communications with representatives from the BCFP and the SEC and Chairperson Pai as well. And I think, the more we can support these organizations and their efforts, the more we will get our message heard. Because right now, and for the last couple of years, the primary voice that has been listened to on the regulator side has been the consumer advocacy groups, the ones that are chanting about the horrors, all these robocall scams, of which we are not a part of. We're not scam institutions, but we're getting brought in by the same really intense solution that they're trying to have to just block everything.
Got it. Thanks. What about you, Robert?
So, so I think the biggest takeaway is, Judd made a great point, staying in front of it, right? Is really dedicating some folks in your organization, to look into this, to research this, whoever's in your contact strategy, or just general strategy, really kind of learn about this, read as much as you can. And, obviously there's articles and webinars and, get as much advice as you can get, from your colleagues and from your friends. And what are you guys doing? What are you guys seeing? And, for us, that's really helped. And, we're all friends here. Obviously we don't, sometimes share all of the industry secrets, but I think that we have a pretty good camaraderie on, helping each other out. And hopefully, somebody in the near future will come up with a great solution that kind of works for the consumer. It works for us as well. The politicians, obviously it's tough, man. I mean, no politician wants to be the one to go out and says, I am for debt collectors. it's just their twins just unfortunately aren't, usually gung-ho about that. But really just making sure that you dedicate the resources to it, adapt, overcome. Unfortunately, sometimes the same old thing is always just the same old thing because it always has been. So, try new things. The branches of communication, email, SMS. It's the way of the future. And unfortunately, the dogs that aren't willing to change are going to be put down. And that's just kind of the way it is. You kind of have to always evolve, not just in our industry, but in every industry in life. You have to evolve and look at what the future. Look at what everybody's, doing and kind of be the first on that forefront.
Awesome. Nick, the last word goes to you.
All right, I'll be quick. Two things. One, what Judd said, be heard, get involved, get in contact with the lawmakers and regulators with data. Information is critical, especially data. And then work with your dialer vendors to partner up with them, to let them know that you're aware that there's a problem and you want to work together to fix it. And, what can we do? Who can help us fix this? But just be aware and be understanding that there is a problem and we need some help in fixing it.
Excellent. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank Nick, Robert, and Judd for their insights and their time. This webinar clearly, definitely, most decidedly would not have been possible without their participation. I also want to thank VoApps for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.voapps.com to learn more about the company.
Thanks to everybody who participated. Thanks to everyone who asked a question. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you.